to you today about some technology we've been working on over the last couple of years to do remote imaging. First, I want to start off by going back and looking at some of the age-old obstacles that, especially in taxonomy, we deal with all the time, because that's sort of the background for this. This picture illustrates one of those, a UPS truck that slammed into a FedEx truck. We ship specimens around the world all the time, and these are very, very fragile and very valuable, and that costs a lot of time and money. And of course, you know, what we're really worried about many times is that we'll lose one of these valuable, irreplaceable specimens. On top of that, there's a lot of time lost in our research, moving things around, and especially in the line of work where I come from, where we're doing identifications, you know. I remember when we first started working on the Emerald Ash Borer, it took us weeks to get a specimen to Europe so we could verify an identification. There's also this kind of haven't we been here before thing going on, where each generation that comes along needs to go back and restudy the same types again, pull them out of the cabinets and rehandle them, take a chance on breaking those, and we're always sort of starting from scratch. So how this got started was a little over 4 years ago at a meeting in South Africa. A number of us were sitting around sort of brainstorming and talking about technology and where things might go, and doing a lot of, well, what if we could do this type of conversation? And it occurred to us, what if we could work remotely with specimens? For example, say I wanted to look at a type, but rather than go to London or wait for 3 weeks, I could just log onto a computer, view, manipulate, and photograph that from wherever I was, whether I happened to be in D.C. or whether I was on the road somewhere. No matter whether it was London or D.C., that should not be a problem. We'd want to be able to combine real-time specimen viewing and then add on some extra touches like video conferencing and instant messaging. And from that, as we envisioned it, we get a lot of side benefits. Things that would accrue, for example, the ability to build digital libraries, to automatically log and index images to servers, and to do authentication so that I could put images together and those images would say, Mike Schoff identified this on such and such and he said it was this. This would also serve, we thought, as an educational tool by allowing us even possibly to let students sort of watch work in progress, because you could actually network and broadcast these things to whoever. You could even collaborate in real time online. So a bunch of us went back home, and this has trailed off in a number of different directions. I'm not the only one or the only lab who's worked on this. I was talking to John LaSalle and CSIRO. They've been working on doing some streaming. There's a lot of people who have begun, and Tom's talk just a few minutes ago gets into some of this. But what we were thinking about was we wanted to build a microscope, but it wasn't really going to be like any microscope that we were used to, that we used before. It was going to have all the microscope functions that we're used to. It would be controlled remotely from a computer console. You wouldn't actually be sitting there. And that hookup could be local, from a laptop in the field or from another museum or from wherever you happen to be. And we could not only scan and examine that specimen, but at the same time take high resolution, high quality photographs. And of course, the thing that we realized right away was that this was going to have to be idiot-proof, because the one thing there is no shortage of is idiots. So we put together a sort of a wish list. We wanted the computer interface to be able to manipulate the specimen from on-screen and rotate that in any angle so that you could see any part of the specimen that you wanted to look at. It would have to have pretty good working distance and depth of field, very high resolution optics, and a high magnification range. Of course, when we actually started talking to the engineers about this, they sort of had a few hiccups with that, because a lot of what we were talking about, nobody had really started looking at. This was the first version machine we got then, about a year later, in 2004. At that time, this was our first attempt at using something like this. What we had here was a specimen chamber that we built up. You can see the rotation arm here that allowed us to spin and rotate the specimen. We had an arena camera up here because we realized very early on that you could lose track of this thing once you got very close to it. and you needed a second image to sort of tell you where in the arena you were. And we were using two sorts of modeling and flash lamps on either side for the lighting. That's a little bit more what the stage looked like. In this particular one, the stage didn't move so much, but these servo motors that you see up here were doing all the rotating of the specimen. We actually got pretty good results with that, but we moved on. We had a number of significant issues, not only with the interface, but we kept working with the optics and with the lighting in particular. This is the latest instrument that we have. Just about every single piece has been swapped out from that original instrument. We're not doing anything the same way that we did initially. In this one, this whole table moves back and forth, and the lens and the camera system up here moves up and down to focus in that way. You can see here looking down, this is where the, at least in a pin-mounted specimen, this is the specimen chamber. That chamber, which you can see is sort of opaque around here, that's lit by a series of four lights that combine both modeling lights, like on the left, so that you can see the image lit up before you photograph it, and then a series of slave flashes that actually expose the picture. That's a little, that's just another view of that. These were some of the early photographs we got. Actually, what we found out was the photography, because, you know, 2003 for digital photography was like the Stone Age already. Things advanced so fast that getting a nice color image turned out not to be such a big deal. But I wanted to show you here, we're able to go from fairly large beetles like this down to things like mounted aphids on a slide, and even things like butterfly, and we get very nice high quality images of those things. But what I really want to spend more time on, because this has been such a learning experience, is some of the things that we've learned in the process of doing this. The first was that the simplicity and the sort of obviousness of the nature of the interface is so important. We didn't realize until we actually started working, manipulating specimens from another room, let alone from another part of the world, just how simple and intuitive the interface had to be for you not to get so confused so fast that you just gave up. Focusing was one of the major problems, and also just getting a handle on how you rotate the specimen when you're working with computer controls, because we've all learned using microscopes, it becomes second nature to us. But when you're sitting at a computer control that you haven't worked with a lot, it's far from that. What we begin using now is a sort of a virtual view, so that in the interface, you see two things. You see what you're actually looking at on the insect, but you also see a virtual bug that sits here and turns as you look at it. And that feedback is really vital in being able to keep track in your mind of where you're at in viewing the specimen, especially as you get closer. It's not so bad when you're back out, like with that butterfly, but when you're in looking at a piece of an antenna, that's when it really gets tricky. Because sometimes just finding a specimen can be a challenge, and if you're somewhere else and you know the specimen's in there, but you can't find it, well, that doesn't work too well. And that's where this arena view comes in real handy. Image quality, I said, has come a long way, but that turned out not to be the most difficult part of this. It turned out to be the optics, because one of the things we wanted right off the bat was we didn't want to be changing lenses from, you know, doing a remote imaging type of thing. We wanted a single lens. Well, if you're going to go from a couple of millimeters up to several inches with a single lens, be able to get very close and very far away, that turned out to be a fairly difficult project for the engineering people to undertake. They did a number of different things with the optics, and I have to say they've done an amazing job with that. The second most critical was lighting. Partly because, again, when you're remote, you don't have a lot, you can't, you've heard people here today talk about moving lights all over the place and putting little, you know, cans and jars on top of their specimen and whatnot. You can't do that. The lighting has to be there. It has to be uniform. You have to be able to see what you're looking at. And when you push that photo button, you want to get a good picture almost every single time. That took some work. One size does not fit all. We're able to go from things like trombiculid mites to butterflies, but we have not been able to get clear down at this point with the optics and the instrument that we have to doing things like small mites and things like bird wings. They just won't fit in the microscope. So we can do about 1 to 2 millimeters, up to 3 or 4 inches. We have the ability to do both pinned and slide mounted. And that's, and this brings up another thing which somebody else mentioned today, which is safety of the specimen. Because again, in working very early with the first model we had, we realized that if we weren't careful, it'd be very easy to smash the lens down into the specimen. So the way we've dealt with that now is we built basically a virtual bubble around the specimen. And what we do is we tell the machine where the top of the specimen is and where the bottom of the specimen is, and then the software basically circumscribes the bubble around that, and it won't let the hardware go inside the bubble. I think probably the most difficult thing beyond the optics and the lighting that I talked about so far has been the IT issues. And this really came at us from sort of out of nowhere because, well, honestly, we just hadn't thought about it all that much. But over the last couple of years, with phishing and spamming and all that kind of stuff, with the constant attacks on computer networks, government agencies like I work for are very, very reluctant to let anybody inside their firewall. And so we had a number of very significant issues with firewalls and servers and routers and trafficking and authentication, who was coming in. And that's hard enough in the U.S. Then you go over to Britain or you go to France and it just begins to multiply. And we're still having significant issues with all of this, punching holes through firewalls, being able to get through certain ports, logging on and getting identification. And then there's other issues like, well, if you're going to archive all these files, where are they going to sit? Who's going to have those servers? Who's going to pay for that? If you're going to do authentication, well, who's going to authenticate it? Who's going to say that this is what it claims to be? And if somebody wants to go in and change something, then who's going to approve that? And we've really run into some very intractable issues of late with the whole authentication and server issue in terms of who gets in and who gets through the firewall to what system. As I said, we have some issues with size limitation. Somebody just a few minutes ago mentioned bandwidth. Bandwidth is a very significant limitation. Our current camera is 12 megapixels. Shoots a pretty good sized file. And you want to take multiple pictures and then you want to ship them, you know, back to where you are, or you want to just view those. And then finally, cost. So far, this has been way more expensive than we ever envisioned it was going to be. These instruments are running, can't give you an actual price, but tens of thousands of dollars a piece. And now that we've actually got a couple of these things, we've begun to realize, well, gee, what if it actually works? Because if it does actually work the way we envision it work, people will want to use it. And if people want to use it, then someone's got to be there. Because even though you're working remotely from wherever you are in the world, somebody's still got to put the specimen in the microscope. And we can envision very rapidly getting to the point where we may actually be booked up all day long. And that means a staff person's got to be assigned to that. And a staff person means money and salaries and benefits. That's become, for the administrators in the agency, a real issue because we can hardly afford to hire technicians as it is, let alone staff people to be dedicated to what is basically a service function, is the way they look at it. Then the other thing that comes up as well, it's just like we have when we ship specimens around now, who do you want to be able to access this thing? Who are you going to let look at your types? And what's their credentials going to have to be? And how are they going to get permission to get in? So where to now? Well, we currently have three instruments built. One's in Paris, one's in London, and one is in Washington. But where we are really is at a bit of a standstill because we've got some very significant issues around, as I mentioned, things like IT and staffing, but we've also got some issues with the company we've been working with and frankly with money, because as I said, this has become a very expensive proposition. What we're trying to do is get this initial network set up to prove the feasibility and actually make sure it does work and that we can get people onto these instruments, they can get trained fairly rapidly, and they can then prove to us that this is something that that people are going to want to use. And they won't, you know, try to get in there and start working with it, and it's going to be so difficult that they don't want to continue on. If we can get this small network functioning, then what we're going to try to do is go out and get major funding so we can actually get a big network of these things installed. this, I think, does have a great deal of potential. I think we're still a ways away yet from being where we'd like to be, even though it's been 4 years of slogging through this. But hopefully in a couple more years, I'll be able to come back and show you something that's really functioning and is a wonderful thing to use. Thanks.